Welcome to Podcast 2187. Enjoy the show. And don't forget to submit your blaster for inspection.
Welcome to Podcast 2187, and we have Mark and Jared and me tonight. And it's going to be a great episode, and I can just feel it. So let's have a great episode now, because I promised everybody we would have one. Mark and Jared, how are you guys doing?
It's always a great episode, Tim.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like Tim's trying to put like undue pressure on us. Like he's experimenting with new motivational strategies or something. He's like, I promised everybody ahead of time, so you owe them. Which isn't how promises should work. But I think it'll be a good episode. Like Mark said, I think they're all fun.
Oh, it'll be amazing. Not
in
just
their
good.
Own way.
Yes.
Even that one where you just read the Thanksgiving menu from Wegmans is pretty good in some way.
Yeah, Tim doesn't have a problem with that episode somehow.
It was one time.
It was sort of the second Thanksgiving episode with Andrea, or period, as well. I feel like our 2016 Thanksgiving was especially, Wegmans-esque. It was a very Wegmans episode. But even this last year, you revisited it a little bit.
It's worth it.
You just
there you go.
One time. It's okay. Our Thanksgiving tradition.
So I guess just the first thing to bring up that really mainly involves both of you is Jackson. So why don't you talk about that?
Tim, what is there not to talk about?
That's why I'm handing the floor over to you two.
There's definitely a tall green humanoid rabbit in a red and white jumpsuit, but we already had that tidbit from Clone Wars.
Yes. We have Jared and I have long been fans of Space Bugs Bunny, and it looks like now officially we are getting at least in one of these, I haven't watched them yet, the Forces of Destiny. There is either Jackson or someone that looks just like him in the background, or maybe her even. We're not quite sure yet.
Yeah, the shot we have is a clear tribute to it. We don't know if they'll actually appear, if they're just in the background or what. Like, I'm into it. I like it because that guy who inspired Bucky O'Hare and was one of the original additions. You know, like you could say he. Set the course for Aphra in a weird way, like as a Marvel original character added to Star Wars.
So that's all the hype you have for potential Jackson?
I think it's coming.
Yeah, what's more important is that there's new episodes of Forces of Destiny out today.
I saw that there was an 8, I think, came out today.
Yeah, how is this not the lead in your podcast 2187 You know, how are we not driving the ship towards that exit?
Because I haven't
rather than you know, we went down to the slums of Forces of Destiny here.
Well, this is Podcast 2187.
That is true. You took us on a roundabout in order to get to the main bit of news. Why don't you tell us about the main bit of news there, Tim?
There are, I believe it's 8 episodes of Forces of Destiny now available for your viewing pleasure. That's the extent of my knowledge on this situation.
You, Tim.
They came out today. I know that too. It was not yesterday or anything. I know it came out today.
There is no one as prepared for an episode as you are.
Thanks.
I'm curious as to seeing, like, in this period that we're revving up for between Han Solo and 9, if the content we are going to get is going to be dropped with no fanfare ahead of time, and it's just interesting to me that this would drop right now, right before that lull is going to begin. You know, like they don't need to promote any, they don't need this right before Han Solo comes out. I feel like as soon as it's coming out, it's just interesting. I'm very curious to see what that apparent drought in content period is going to be like. But it just seems weird with all the fanfare they have given Force of Destiny to drop them all at once like this. But at the same time, you know, when they made the initial announcement last year at Celebration, they dropped that at like midnight the night before. So, like, they have a history of just kind of dropping this news about Force of Destiny suddenly without warning. So, and unexpectedly. So, so I feel like, yeah, this is both weird to me and matches with their pattern of behavior for Force of Destiny.
And you mentioned Solo in there. I just have to say, I feel like of all the movies, Solo is going to be the best one or best opportunity so far to introduce Jackson if they're going to in a movie.
Yeah, as a character walking around, sure, I could see that.
Right.
I don't think he'd ever speak in this.
Right, but as like a background, somebody who passes by.
It'd be cool like if Chopper he was like one. It'd be cool if he was like a full on like you know, Dr. Evazan level, just for comic fans, and there was like a brief exchange, even if there was like him leaving and having interacted with somebody. I'd be super satisfied if there was just a background shot with no dialogue, but it was him talking to Chewie and then him like walking off. Like I'd just be like, that's awesome. But yeah, I'm not expecting anything big. The news I talked about to fill the space while you were looking up stuff last week, Tim, about Michael K. Williams's role that's played by Paul Bettany now and appears to not be a humanoid alien lion man. That description reminded me a little bit of Jackson, just because he said it was like a bipedal lion. It was, you know, a humanoid animal hybrid. Just kind of sounds like Jackson only describing a lion man instead of a rabbit man, which just made me a little hopeful, perhaps, that they'd have him in there. But again, lots of things that make sense for Han Solo we're not getting, like or it would appear like Maz Kanata or Jackson, or all the things, or just all the things I want.
Well, hey, so here's a question: When Michael K. Williams was going to play him,
yes,
he was going to be more of a CG character, correct?
It sounded like that, or either CG or he had makeup. Either way, he described himself in two different interviews as being half animal, half man. And in the second one, saying he was a mountain lion man.
And now he's not. Now the character is not that way.
It would really seem so, because I've never seen a set photo from Star Wars with a character who was in heavy makeup or CGI who was just in a regular costume. And he's basically dressed like he could be Han Solo, only played by Paul Bettany in the on-set photos that Ron Howard's posted. I think there's at least two where he's just wearing a vest and a white shirt. He's got nothing on his face to indicate, you know, the motion capture technology. He's got no makeup, nothing on his hands. It's like they didn't put you in full costume to take fun photos for Twitter. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't make sense that they have him in that full costume that way with no smocks or anything and then put makeup on. Like it feels like it's definitive, but it's not at the same time. Like it is still speculative, but
it's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's just interesting because I wonder in what other places, like there's a design that, let's say, I forget their names now, sorry, the previous directors.
Oh, yeah, Lord Miller.
You're right. I wonder what other instances were there to where Lord Miller, like, yes, that's the design we want. This is what he's going to look like. He's going to be half alien, he's a half man, half creature. And then, you know, Howard comes in and says, why does he have to be that? Why can't we just have the guy, you know, more relatable and look like a human?
I sort of assumed that it has to do with the same reasons that they did the recasting and was a time constraint issue for the reshoots, especially if it is prosthetics and whatnot. It takes a lot longer to get, you know, that ready for an actor. That's not one size fits all if it's Lion Man makeup on a face and then a mask. You know what I mean? Like, so it's interesting to think it's possible it's a creative choice, but it's also possible it's just a time issue, because it feels like the way he's described by Michael K. Williams, it just feels like it's an echo of Woody Harrelson's character, because he's like a humanoid mentor. If Paul Bettany is the same character, is a human and a mentor, which is just, I don't know, feels kind of boring, because we've gotten all our leads so far, you know, have been humans. Our only like new alien character really is Maz, since they've started doing new movies. And I'd like to see more aliens myself, but You could absolutely be right that he just wanted to see humanity more or something. It was a creative choice from Howard. I hope, because Howard has been more open about that stuff and he doesn't have any ill will towards anybody, that we might get that information when it's over. Because if it's not dragging dirty laundry, there's no harm in telling us the behind the scenes stuff after the fact. If it's not mean spirited, why hide it?
And we don't even really have any information though for any of the other movies at this point.
That's true. And we know there's so many differences with Rogue One. Although with that stuff, it feels like, I guess any of these changes they want to cover up because they hired the guys who they ended up firing. it's just interesting. Like, and you've said again and again that you just wish they'd have a finished script that they're set with, before they made these announcements sometimes. And I tend to agree, like, at this point, like, because we'd be a lot less dissatisfied if we knew less of the information about how the sausage was made. If we didn't know all the missteps they're making and people who've been fired or replaced or had new people come on to redo part of it or whatever. Because if you look at the writing, even from the very beginning, that's been happening. Because aren't you
right, know, right.
replaced. So it makes sense that they don't want to talk about it, I guess. But it's just interesting. Like, if it's not a mistake, then they shouldn't be so ashamed to talk about it. And it feels like it's something that happens in movie studios a lot. You just don't. They don't always make giant announcements like 18 months ahead of time as to who's doing it, you know?
Yeah, I think now with just how we are as a consumer of, in the past, everything was sort of funneled through the intermediaries to where, you saw what Entertainment Tonight or Entertainment Weekly or Empire Magazine wanted to give you. Now there's so many people out there. Hey, you can even harken it back to the old days of Hollywood. You had one or two people who wanted to, what was it, like rags out there that would like to get the scoop on what really happened, but everything was pretty much funneled through, the press. They didn't talk about how the soup's made or how things were done. Everything was puff pieces. And I think the same was true for the longest time with Hollywood. And now that everyone's out there, trying for a scoop, you get stuff like TMZ. You get stuff like, for a long time it was Perez Hilton. You get, every little website out there in pop culture is trying to be the one to take the first pick of, Shazam and costume or whatever. So that now you get to see the insides of how things really work. And I don't know. At times, I kind of miss the old days.
Well, it's true, especially with stuff like you're talking about the Shazam stuff, which made me think of the other onset Captain Marvel related deal where there was some fervor because it looks like either the coloring is done to be computer corrected because green is easiest to grab for green screen stuff, or it's a callback to the Marvel Captain Marvel's original coloring because the Kree costume is black and white and green, and this costume looks kind of black and green, and it feels like it's maybe an intentional shout out to that or something. And like everyone involved, one of the concept artists who designed the costume, who posted the original one that looks just like she's looked at the comics for like three or four years now, and then Kevin Feige as well, right? Or they both mentioned, like, why are people freaking out over this costume? Like, haven't we given you enough faith in our process so far? Like, that our costumes don't look crazy or whatever, And no, honestly, they're getting closer to the comic books as time goes on. Like, as we get farther away from Blade and 1999 X-Men movie or 2000 X-Men movie, like we get farther and farther away of this being afraid to show superheroes as superheroes in mainstream media. And like, yeah, their costumes are pretty comic accurate for what they are. So I'm not worried about that stuff. And it feels like any of the on-set photos from a Marvel movie or from a Star Wars movie or from even something more with less hype around it, it's just another excuse for people to get upset about something. Like, I saw people trying to, like, complain about the Shazam photos. Those look great. Like, yeah, but people were acting like it's silly or whatever. It's like he's a 10-year-old kid who says a magic word and turns into what he imagines Superman, you know, him as Superman to be, who in the story is looks like his dad, who, you know, he barely remembers because he's an orphan. It's like, this is a silly story. It's about a kid who gets magic powers from a wizard he meets after he falls through a subway station into a magic world. Like, this is...
I don't know what you're talking about. That's based on a true story.
It is based on a true story. It's also a legend of, what do you call it? The Sinbad, fake Sinbad genie movie comes from the word Shazam.
Kazam.
Kazam was real with Shaq. And then just like the Berenstain Bears thing, people insist there was a movie called Shazam starring Sinbad as a genie.
Here's the other thing while we delve into that Berenstain Bears thing. I keep walking by this book every day. It's the Berenstain Bears, but it's not spelled that way. And I didn't know they were so religious. It was always a Christian book?
I don't know. I just remember feeling like it was sort of like it was sexist, like 80s and 90s sitcoms where they just had very, very gendered roles, like, and they were the same as the 80s sitcoms, where the dad was a complete idiot and the mom was no fun and always right. and exasperated with the dad and kids' antics. So I don't know. That sort of does fit in with a couple of the super conservatively Christian households that I knew growing up. Like that same sort of just dynamic. I had a lot of those as a kid. I really enjoyed them when I was a really little kid, but I don't remember a Christian aspect. I just remember the mom always like warning them about crap. There was one about stranger danger, one about watching too much TV, eating too much sweets. Like it was, yeah. I guess they were very much like modern parables, but like not with any important lessons, just like little like morality plays telling you not to do fun stuff too much.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because it was in like the Christian book section.
The Christian book section.
Yeah, I don't remember it being that growing up. And I was like, see, this is the alternate reality. They used to be one thing,
secular. And now they're
they used to be secular, and now they're Berenstain, because see, with Berenstain it used to be different, and now we're getting Berenstain and Christian, and it's like, no, this is not what I expected.
That does feel like something that's maybe new. I never bought into the alternate reality thing, but maybe I fell through a wormhole as well.
That's right. Never bought the alternate reality thing. Come on, you know it's true.
No, it's I love the group thing that if somewhere I know that this happened, like there are whole articles on it with the Kazam Shazam thing. It's that one makes no sense.
Well, you know, we're looping it back to Star Wars.
Yes.
I swear forever that I saw the big stuff, and and part of me still goes, no. There's got to be something that I saw on TV. I didn't see it in the theater, but there had to be something that I saw on TV at that age to where I remember it in motion.
Well, and then I remember hearing people swear, you know, that they saw a version of it that had the episode 4, but didn't have A New Hope added in. But I don't think that's
true.
So it did say episode 4, but it did not say A New Hope?
I thought that the very, very original theatrical version didn't say episode 4.
It just started with the text. There was no episode 4 until it was re-released before episode 5.
Jared, right. it's on DVD.
But like per the original 1977 release, I'm like, yeah, it's my understanding it did, because it wasn't known as episode 4 until again when 5 came out.
Right. So, but there was a period of time between them adding A New Hope and that.
Between what?
Because I guess like Tim was just saying, originally it just started with the text. It didn't have episode 4 in the 77 theatrical release, and they added it with the re-release right before Empire.
Yeah,
but I've heard people say that when they first added the episode 4 there was no A New Hope, but it just said
that one. Okay,
I think that's just confusing the fact that before it didn't have either of those, And so yeah, people conflating something that is close to the truth, you know, and just not quite remembering. And there's other stuff, you know, people swearing that there was a TV cut with something that, that ended up being a deleted scene later. And the, it's just, I think, us transposing the later memory, you know, the something that came with the special editions or with the DVD release and thinking that we saw it at a younger age, like just not being able to separate it.
You're saying there's the 77 version, then there's a version that just said episode 4, then there's a version that's episode 4 A New Hope.
Right, and I don't think that there's the one in between it. I think that it's just people conflating the two things, conflating the original version with the
other. And then there's 8 million different sound mixes with Baru being one dub and then her being another.
Yeah, and everybody talks about the special editions re-releases, but I remember was it 95? Was it 10? No. Was it 93? Is it 10 years after Jedi, but they did the THX remastered re-release in theaters? Because I remember seeing those too as a kid. It wasn't as big a deal as the special editions, but I still remember them being re-released when I was quite a bit older, just be like, hey, awesome. I get to see these again. and not having seen, you know, the original two in theaters originally. So that was a... That's awesome. They used to re-release them all the time, but they just don't do that as often with movies unless it's like a special, like, one weekend event, you know?
Right.
They don't re-release stuff for like a month anymore. We just make too many movies.
There was a while there you could get some 3D releases, maybe, or re-releases, but that was about it.
Yeah, where they would remaster stuff.
Yeah.
Like even Star Wars, but then they stopped after Phantom Menace, right?
Well, see, I was thinking about that the other day. Well, no, they did them all. I mean, they didn't release them in the theaters.
Right.
They did
right.
Attack of the Clones and what was it? Revenge of the Sith. But I would really love for there to be some way for us to see the alternate versions of things, you know, because I remember going to see the IMAX version of the Attack of the Clones. And I'd love to see that cut again. I only saw it once. It's they cut out a lot of the Padme and Anakin stuff. And obviously the aspect ratio is entirely different. And I think it'd be great to see again, you know, because I don't
you're
remember.
You're getting extra information on the sides, right? When you're talking about the aspect ratio, it gets cut down. Yeah.
And that's spread a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's, you know, I've always thought of it as the only people I usually hear talking about it, at least with any sort of consistency or like passion, are the guys who demand the original cuts. They don't even know what they're talking about. They just don't want the special editions on principle. So I kind of don't that angry mob that talks about it a lot, I kind of dismiss that. But what you're talking about is just saying, hey, it'd be cool to be able to see that stuff. And, you know, it's like you said, like they have the DVD versions they did of the pre-special editions that came with the special editions that didn't sell well enough to justify re-releasing them for the past, like,
yeah, man. I mean, honestly, I'd love to see. I mean, I grew up on the original versions. I'd love to see the original versions, but I'd like to see everything. You know,
that'd be cool.
Do everything with seamless branching. I'd like to get the Phantom Menace with the extended pod race that's only on DVD. I'd like to have that. You know,
well, there's plenty of movies that have, you know, director's cuts, ultimate cut, whatever, you know, but like,
I'm not asking for only the original trilogy. I'm asking for all of it.
Yeah. You're not saying it has to be my way. You're just saying, hey, like there's so many super fans. Why not let there be something available for completed?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cough in the thing. Yeah. You know, and I think also with everybody, you can seriously do it to where, you know, just keep milking us for our money. That's the way to do it.
Well, I was just thinking of that. Like, it's probably still the case. It's just people only get stuff online now for the most part. But, like, I just remember when I was collecting DVDs a lot, like in college, right out of college, every single comedy that came out that was, like, big, even the R-rated comedies, had their unrated version. Like, it was customary. And they sold both. Like, they sold the regular version for the regular teenagers who parents who wouldn't want them to have extended fart jokes and topless scenes for no reason added into every single comedy. but
right,
that's what they did, and they made money. And I always rented those. Like, I don't know. I just assumed. It's like I was just having a conversation about our ratings, you know, generally decreasing ticket sales. And just, it's harder because kids can't go on their own. So, you know, an R-rated movie in general has a harder time making giant money, and none of the top tens are R or whatever to one is or something. But like, it's just, it's very rare. And I don't know, it makes me think about that. Like, even I have that like pre-program where I just assumed that the mature version was better. I'm like, well, it's gotta be better. Like, there'd be some reason they're keeping it from kids. But it's like, no, it's usually just topless scenes and fart jokes or poop jokes in those movies. Like, there's no quality issues.
There's still, like, you know, I won't buy Dumb and Dumber on, like, it's one of my favorite comedies, the original Dumb and Dumber. I won't buy it on DVD or Blu-ray because it's the director's cut.
They don't have the original cut?
Yeah, they don't have the one that I've seen for years. You know, they have this one that they did to try and extend the life of it on home video. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine. If you want to put that in there, that's great. But that's not the one I want. I want the only one I know. You know, obviously the timing sometimes with, and it feels like sometimes when they do the, like you said, the extended cuts for comedies, it for me, it feels like the timing's off. Like, it's not as funny.
You know, for sure.
I'm more into a real tight, clean, funny 90 minutes than, you know, give me 18 variations of a joke. I mean, I'll take that as a gag reel or whatever, but I don't need it otherwise.
That's, and like, I would never buy them as two separate things. I didn't even buy the movie at all. But I was a big fan of the original Anchorman. Less of a fan of the second one. It's still funny, but I don't know if you remember, but they did a second theatrical release after it had been out like 2 months.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was like, I think 60% of the movie had different punchlines. They're all the same plot and all the same setup, but they were alternate takes because it's that so much of their attitude, you know, is improv, is just kind of winging it, and so much of their comedy style is just making it up as they go and interacting with each other, with the other actors they like. So it's just like so weird. But right before you go, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it. You could look into it. I believe it's called Wake Up, Ron Burgundy. But
yeah, they did.
It is awful. And they basically tried to do it before, but also use all the cut plot elements. And there was a bunch of stuff talking about the kind of mocking the real life 1970s group, the Weathermen. it was like really having to do with this political group. It was like some sort of, it was a more direct parody. And it was a little bit of of another group too, of the Symbionese Liberation Army, I believe. The combination of those two real life 70s kind of cult and political group movement things that they ended up cutting entirely from the first Anchorman, and then taking a bunch of alternate cuts to punchlines and this cut plot element and editing it together into a parallel movie that takes place alongside the original Anchorman, but isn't quite the same. And it's awful. Like, it's so bad. Like, if they're going to do it, just do the alternate jokes. Like, don't try to make it into a completely different movie. Anchorman 0.5 or whatever. Like, it's that was a weird experiment. But I feel like that inspired them to do the alternate cut. Right? Someone doesn't have a muffler.
Well, and like, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious how many, you know, everyone seems to be really, and don't get me wrong, I love it. I can't wait for it. You know, the isolated score track on Star Wars Last Jedi. You know, it's so rare to get a isolated John Williams track on any Blu-ray, and especially a Star Wars one. But it's like there's all these little things, you know, you hear how people are clamoring for it and excited about it. And it's like, okay, hey, Disney, guess what? You've got a ton of other movies from Star Wars that you could do this to. That you could just re-release the movie with an isolated score track, and you will get $25 out of me, I swear. If that's the only new thing that there is, I will give you $25
yeah,
for every damn movie. And then if you happen to put it, if you happen to put it with, re-release it with the original theatrical posters, and maybe on the other side of the design, you have maybe the special edition posters or something. I'll pay for that too. I'll do it. But just there's a lot of ways I want more Star Wars in it. It's just like they're just sitting on it. You know, there was a really great. I wouldn't say documentary, but when Revenge of the Sith came out, when you bought the, I don't know what store it was or if it was a store exclusive, but when you bought Revenge of the Sith, you got a DVD of basically Ian McDiarmid narrating the Star Wars saga for you, set to like music videos made up from all of John Williams' music. And so it's the important scores or the important highlights of you know all the movies with scenes from the films and Ian McDiarmid coming in telling you the story of Star Wars. And it's like, great. I love it. Now put that on Blu-ray. I'll buy it. $25. It's only like an hour long. I'll buy it. You know, give me John Williams just doing a Star Wars concert. I'll buy it. It's fine.
I just had a thought that would not make them necessarily brilliant, but that would make sense. And I just can't predict anything they're going to do at this point. Like Lucasfilm, I think they're going to zig and they zag, you know? Like nobody thought they were going to announce the Game of Thrones guys. They did. And then Jon Favreau TV, you know, like when we just heard for sure they're doing live action TV, when not that long before that, they were like, no, we're focusing on live action just for film. They don't tell us about stuff they're already working on. So I can't predict what they're going to do. But all the stuff you've just been saying, Mark, and all the stuff that we were talking about before about the lull, you know, and something I've mentioned and we've mentioned before on the show, like this, you know, very large gap, this like 19-month gap in content is pretty big. What if they use that period of time as an opportunity to do a bunch of nostalgia re-releases when we don't have content for the first time in over a year? You know, like if that's an opportunity when we're starved for Star Wars and we're used to buying it every Christmas, if they just don't do something like that and use that opportunity and the increased fan base.
Jared, I think that's a great idea.
I hope that's what they're doing.
Well, because it goes along with something I was thinking about yesterday, too, actually, because, you know, I still play Star Wars Card Trader, and they have these little cards that came out that were it was concept art from A New Hope, right? So I'm like, oh, I don't think I've ever seen that. So I pull out my Art of Star Wars book from A New Hope, and I'm like, I don't see that one in here. So it's got to be somewhere. So then it gets me thinking, you know, why don't they have new and updated versions of, here's all the stuff from A New Hope, but, you know, sort of a retrospective.
Oh, you know, man,
they don't sell the art of books anymore.
When you could do giant art of Star Wars, you know, for the first 40 years and cut it off before Last Jedi and stuff and show I just think because they're going to want to do more later on, but I was just thinking it'd be cool to do something that, or maybe even do Last Jedi because they made it in that period of time. But like, I'm just thinking it'd be so neat to have something that was comprehensive, but had a clear ending point so they could start with everything after that. But you could show concept trilogy. Art. You could split it up like that perfectly. But I was just thinking of something that wasn't split up necessarily into the original trilogy, because when it got to that unused concept art, it could like show how it correlates into both the Clone Wars and Rebels shows, because all that stuff has so much crossover. Like you could do a whole book on the unused art that we had never seen before, but have seen now, and a bunch of stuff we had seen before that has been reworked and used. Like it's just interesting because it's something that I've complained about, and I think you've complained about a little bit as well, about just because especially the first couple seasons, they leaned so hard into the McQuarrie stuff. And they still did, but like Ezra's outfit in the end is still a bunch of pieces of McQuarrie designs. But they got more and more free to move away from it. You know, Kanan's look at the end wasn't the same thing. Ahsoka didn't look like – I don't know. The stuff was inspired by McQuarrie designs, but it wasn't entirely lifted. I feel like they got more and more free to look like A New Hope and to look like Rogue One and just move a little bit away from that stuck style from the first few episodes, but
There's even a lot of stuff that's just you know, I have the Art of the Clone Wars book, and it's a really nice book. Yeah, it is now. When I bought it, it was literally $8 because they put them all to remainder stores. So Amazon Marketplace owners went to every like Five and Below or you know, cheap place like what is it? What's that place called? It's not Pick and Save. It's that dates me. It's Big Lots. So they'd go to Big Lots and pick these books up, like a store like that. And then they'd sell it for $8. They bought it for $4. They make a profit, whatever. Now it's like in the hundreds. The problem with the book is the book only covers the movie and maybe season one with some insight into what's coming in season two.
It's probably whatever they had done at the time.
Right. Like, I mean, we've got five seasons, a sixth lost season. We've got same thing happens with Rebels. We haven't seen anything on Rebels as far as the art of.
They've had a lot of that same artwork has been used in the DK books that are informational for kids, which
and
are
those
cool,
even end. But, I have them. I bought them, but those even end like at the second season.
Yeah, they stopped doing new tie-in merch that's like original. Everything that they made after that is like just using old assets or pre-made assets for new designs.
Can I rant real quick? So I'm trying to pick up all the books that I miss. So I got like the first two Clone Wars ones. It's like Clone Wars Battles, and it's kind of the DK books that we're just talking about. I picked up the first two Rebels ones. The episode guide one, for whatever reason, is like $60 for Clone Wars. It pretty much has everything except for season six.
Right.
So I don't know if I'm getting that one.
That stuff is interesting to me, too. Stuff becomes so obsolete, you know?
Yeah. But here's the issue. So I picked up the character encyclopedia. I like you know, promotional shots of characters, and this is all Clone Wars, so it's like, you know, really nice pictures of all these random characters. And this was done 2016. Disney owns it. It was produced in the Disney era because it's got a little Disney logo down there at the bottom. And I'm like, okay, this is great. So as I'm going through it, I'm like, yeah, that character. I remember that character. There is no Darth Maul or Maul, no Savage Opress, no Knight Brothers, no Knight Sisters. And I was like, okay, I wonder why that is. And then there's no Saw Gerrera or his sister. I was like, I wonder if they knew that Rebels was taking, you know, Darth and all that. And I wonder if they knew Rogue One was taking Saw, because I can't figure out why those are the only characters that are omitted that I can remember off the top of my head. It's just a big chunk.
Huh.
I mean, they got Cut Laquane and his woman in it, but they don't have Darth.
Yeah, it feels really weird they wouldn't have Maul in it.
Yeah, and they've got Pre Vizsla. You know, so it's not like they stopped at a certain point. I can't tell what the cutoff is. Obviously, they don't have anything. They don't have anything from the Yoda episodes, the later stuff. They don't have any of that stuff.
Well,
but Night Sisters is pretty early on, and it does have a relationship.
Night Sisters are. Man, that stuff's so weird. And the release schedule, everything about like the production and release and how everything's out of order and whatnot with Clone Wars is weird. But if it was made with the Disney logo, and that was made after they'd already completed the Lost season, you know, that's nuts.
And let's just say, okay, it doesn't include the Lost season. I'd be fine with that. But then why wouldn't it include Darth Maul? I mean, he came in what, season three?
I think he came in four.
The cliffhanger from three to four? I don't remember.
There was a huge chunk of time. Like, I think maybe that's right. And then he didn't appear again until the end of four. And then, like, five had his whole arc in Mandalore. But, like, because I think you don't really see him, but they plant the seed. Because they I think maybe three is the one that has the whole arc with Ventress and Savage. And then it ends with Savage having the vision of his brother, and you can see Maul's face, and like he has like the mission to find him. And you're like, you know it's coming. But I remember there being like a really weird gap in time in those episodes, just being like, what the heck? Like, why is this taking so long? Like, and then when it finally happened, because I watched them and after they'd all aired, I binged them, and I was from being like, why are we not seeing Maul?
Well, you know, talking about this a little bit in animated episodes, obviously we have great ideas how we would like for them to bridge the gap between, you know, the 19 months. Also, since they now, I believe, have the rights to all the music, time to future-proof the music by giving it a proper remaster and all the bells and whistles for that thing. Because I tell you right now, there's a guy, he's amazing in the music world as far as soundtracks goes. His name's Mike Medicino. He is probably the best producer as far as remastered albums. And if he got his hands on Star Wars to just give it sort of the definitive treatment, it would be unbelievable. It would be so good. He found like some of the, oh man, some of he redid the recent one, the ET one, that it's for a company called La La Land Records. And my God, just listen to the outtakes or the alternate versions of some of this stuff. If we can get alternate versions, like more than what we already know for Star Wars, it would be fantastic. I'm into it. You guys don't have to. You guys can say nothing. No,
I think you're right.
That was on the road to my point, which was, do we get a cartoon series before Episode 9? Not announced. Well, airing.
I was gonna say we'll definitely get the announcement. Airing, I'm less sure of, but it's possible. It's been just over a year, you know, like a year and a half almost, that we found out Filoni was working and developing other stuff for Lucasfilm Animation. But he'd taken a step back in Rebels for ahead of season 3. So,
don't you think it's safe to assume that we honestly might get it this year at San Diego? Because there's nothing
possible.
Else. There's nothing else Star like, Wars.
You're absolutely right, but it feels like it wouldn't just premiere. They could.
They could for a select group of
Right, and they could do a panel too. What I was going to say, where they just do a piece of it, you know, and do it D3 style, where they don't let anyone film it, and they don't put it online, and they just do like something, an unfinished bit, when they do the announcement. That's very plausible, and that we get it before the end of the year. They could. I mean, if they've been working on it that long, especially if it's CGI, because they have engines already built and they've already redone, you know, stuff that they learned how to do, on Clone Wars with technology they have created specifically in-house, at Lucasfilm now under Disney's ownership. I don't know, man. It's easier to, if you keep a staff, it's easier to keep going and move on. What I find interesting is, because again, it could all be part of like a public perception and how they're portraying things. But like from the way Vanessa Marshall and Tia Sirkar have talked about it, it seems like they would, they've said like that they want to see their stories continue. It feels like they don't know, maybe genuinely, from some of the stuff I've seen them say, they really don't know what their future has with these characters. Which would mean, if that's true, that they're being upfront and straightforward and not, playing a non-disclosure game, and they have developed the stuff already and they are coming, then it's possible that it's not what we would think. And we have been thinking it's not going to continue this directly, that something else will, maybe animated films, maybe something for the streaming stuff that's not coming in this next year for the streaming site. Who knows? Like I feel like, I'm hoping that we do get an announcement at least in that time, maybe something that premieres, but we also get announcement of something else coming down the pipeline. And what we talked about the last couple episodes, having someone else be working on something, or have Filoni trust someone else to work under him and take more of a lead, and just have more than one animated show coming out at a time, because there's nothing wrong with it. I think they could do it.
I'd like, like we talked about, but I think it would be great to continue the Filoni stuff. If they do too, continue the Filoni stuff on Disney XD. Put the new stuff on the streaming service. Maybe and maybe even up put the new cartoon series on that, maybe update it a little bit to where it doesn't necessarily have to be the same age level that you're shooting Rebels for. It could be the same age level as the movies.
Yeah.
It could be PG-13, let's say.
Yeah, something that older kids will be just as into, and adults will be just as into, and the kids will watch, but not, it's not geared towards 8 to 12 year olds.
Yeah, it's geared more for the anime crowd, let's say.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool, and like, yeah, and it would work with. Yeah.
Well, because then you have the Lego stuff for the younger crowd. You've got the Rebels for the mid level. You've got the anime stuff for the older.
Force of Destiny sort of crosses the whole gamut. It's like,
yeah,
a whole age range.
And they just give me a hard R live action.
I still don't know we need that, but I mean, it's something that's doable. It just feels like they've been very selective with the Netflix content. That's all they do. Marvel hard R. You know, I don't think there's been rumors. There was a site that released at the end of the last week that Infinity War was going to be an R rating, and then people were saying that was not happening. And I got into a discussion about R and Disney and Marvel, and some people were saying that they thought it wouldn't be a big deal for them to go R, and I don't think it would really matter too much, but that is a difference, you know. It's
no, you couldn't on that. Strictly because this is a culmination of things right. That kids have seen that have been PG, PG-13.
Right.
So, but well,
I agree.
Like if you started something, if you started in like a Disney streaming service, and what I mean by hard R is I don't want them to swear, but you know the scene in Revenge of the Sith where the ship blows up and you see one of the clone fighters fly out into space and you know he's dead.
Yeah.
It would be a scene like that, but more like, you know, if you see lightsaber battles, you see people clearly get cut in half. You know, they don't shy away from it.
I'm going to have to look something up right now because you're reminding me of an ILM scene that is one of my favorites from childhood. It's not Star Wars. Do you remember Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country?
Yeah.
You remember the opening scene was like the murder that they were investigating that like, I think they ended up being framed for whatever, and it might have been Vulcan or Klingon on Klingon. I can't remember, but it was a zero gravity fight scene, and it had blood. It had like globules of blood like floating in space, and I remember, I was I think almost 9 when that movie came out, and that made an impression, and I was like, that is awesome, and it wasn't gory, but it was like one of the most violent things I'd seen. I think. At the time, because that might have been right before my mom went out of town and we rented Terminator. so yeah, I think like that was definitely one of the more.
Well, the blood in zero gravity was a plot point because it floats onto one of the guy's shoes, and they find the shoes in the closet.
And it's how they like frame somebody or whatever.
That's how they found out that it wasn't Kirk and Bones who actually
that's how they exonerated him.
Right, exonerated him, but then they had to go – long story. I know we're trekked. Then they had to go to – I think it was Rurapente, which was the – God, why do I know all this? Which is the prison planet for Klingons to get him out with the shapeshifter Iman who's helping them.
That was only rated PG. That wasn't even PG-13. They showed dudes getting stabbed and then like bodies worth of blood floating around in space around them. I just can't.
One of the best villains ever, too.
It feels like that wouldn't be the case now, you know? Like it feels like that would be an R or a PG-13, which is weird. Because in some ways, TV feels different. Like not only can we curse more as we're always discussing with Tim, as you and Andrew are always thinking we can't say ass because we can't say something related to that word. But I just think like I was watching a Supernatural once with my niece like a year and a half ago, and I was still in Portland, and my nephew walked in at like, you know, 7 years old, right at the most violent thing I'd ever seen on that show when they decapitated like a vampire, and just the way they showed the shot. Like it cut to the guy and his head just slid off his body. And I'm like, I never would have seen that on TV. Like in 1989, like it would not have been on anything that wasn't cable. It would never have been on network TV, and it was just on network TV. And like the fact that ratings are now harder in theaters, but TV is just anything goes. It feels like a really weird dichotomy, but that's a fact. Like I went to see movies in the theater that weren't even PG-13, that were more violent than Avengers movies now. That, you know, when they punch bad guys and they disappear or whatever. Like what? Those faceless bad guys that are basically like sacks of nothing in the first Guardians of the Galaxy. Like they're just like giant pinata people. Like there's no mortality to it. It's interesting. It's like live action movies have become more like G.I. Joe stuff, where it's kind of dumbed down a little bit.
I think we'll see something eventually. maybe when they're trying to do a money grab at some point, we might.
Well, and I think what you're saying about the streaming service makes the most sense. Like that's what I was getting to with Netflix and Marvel. Like I feel like that's a good place for it because it is. You know, yeah, kids are still going to go see it, but it's not the same thing as putting it out in the theaters. Like the theaters is a tradition of you can take your families to see those movies. And the cartoons, you know, they might make it. They'll make an anime tie-in or whatever if they do the same stuff, follow the same path as every other major franchise that does really, really license itself. Eventually, there'll be a Star Wars anime, just like they have several Star Wars mangas, even a couple since they've done the whole everything is canon relaunch stuff, you know, to sell in other markets. They've done these translations, and it'll be interesting. I just watched an X-Men manga all the way through, an X-Men anime, and like it's takes place in Japan, and for the most part it's the American characters going to Japan, but there's also like a major storyline that's redone with Japanese characters, like, and it's really interesting. Like, I imagine we'll have something, some equivalent, you know, where hopefully they won't have it take place in Japan. It'll still take place in a galaxy far, far away. But I can see something very similar being done to market to specific audiences, especially knowing all the effort Lucasfilm and Disney and every Hollywood studio is making to court China. Cool. Just making stuff that's designed specifically for it more and more and more, and cutting movies with content added or cut specifically with those markets in mind. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's just very interesting to me. And I don't know. I feel like we're on the verge of getting something like that from Star Wars. And eventually maybe we'll get all that stuff on streaming content, you know, a hard R spaghetti Western, Tales from Tatooine with a bunch of Boba Fett episodes. I know you'd love. We get Ian McShane as a whatever bartender in Mos Eisley.
Have we even let Tim talk at all? We haven't, have we?
Well, if I needed to say something, I would have.
I'm like, poor Tim, we're just hogging the conversation.
Let's let Tim take us into whatever we do next.
Yeah, or whether we're done or not.
I'm like, there really isn't a whole lot of next to go into.
I had one other thing.
All right.
Do you remember that, Tim?
We'll find out, won't we?
Editorial, yes, shifting around. Yo. Of comic book editorial. X-Men editor Mark Panacea. I don't know how to pronounce his name. He is switching roles with Jordan White, the Star Wars editor. So he has taken over Star Wars, and Jordan is moving over to X-Men. They're both staying at Marvel Comics. And the previous co-editor with Jordan White, as Mark mentioned right before recording, a couple of weeks ago, left Comics and Marvel entirely to do some sort of web-based business. I can't remember what it was, but it was a different role. She was still working in an editorial capacity, but for a web-based business and not a print media. But Heather Antos is leaving Star Wars Comics as well, so it's a big shakeup in editorial there, which made me get into a conversation with a friend about Salvador LaRocca, one of the guys who's drawn a bunch of Star Wars comics and who traces a bunch. And he and Greg Land are kind of notorious in the comic book industry for guys who just clearly trace photos and not anyone else's artwork, which other comic artists have done in the past, but like they'll look up public domain photos or photos from movies and TV shows and they'll just trace them. And it's really depressing that they get so much work because I think they're both talented artists. But it made me think of why we get so much Sal LaRocca and X-Men, who used to do X-Men. Why I think we won't have him move with Jordan White, because a lot of times editors will keep the same artists and creators. But I think he'll maybe stick around with Star Wars books because he's a good fit for them, because he traces from actors. It's easy because they'll want their likenesses to match. They want movie characters to look like the actors. They want Carrie to look like Carrie and Mark to look like Mark. And they can do that by tracing. And so I feel like maybe he'll stick around Star Wars, even though I'd prefer for him to draw from his imagination, because I've seen him do it in the past 20 years.
Who was the guy that led off the Star Wars comic?
The very first arc? John Cassidy?
No, second arc.
Oh, was that Stuart Immonen? Immonen?
Where did he go?
He has been on two books since then, I think. No, he did X-Men before that. I don't know what he did before, what he's done other than Spider-Man, but he does Spider-Man.
His stuff was great.
He is super talented, and he was managed to capture people's essences without having anything look like it was traced. You know, like. Yes. He did a great job keeping their spirit. He drew the best Son of Solo for my money. Yeah, I wish he was doing Star Wars stuff. And maybe he'll come back to it, because I know he is ending his Spider-Man run. I don't think they've announced what book he's going on.
Here's the other thing I wanted to talk about too, that I mentioned, that, you know, it seems like, from what I understand, the main sales on the number one comic for a long time was Star Wars. It's taken a pretty big hit in sales, no?
In general, comic sales have declined over the past year. They're still not actually in bad shape, and people like have been really scared. But like, it's
as
I
a
think
percentage
it's because,
though, has it hit? Is it taking a bigger hit than some other titles?
I think it has, because it was number one overall, and in general, the past year or so, Marvel books are losing heavily to DC. DC books are winning out for the first time consistently since their big relaunch, like in 2011. So,
but it's my understanding from what I've seen on the internet and what I've read that it feels like Marvel doesn't really care that much about solid art. Am I wrong?
About solid art?
Well, they put out some very subpar art in a lot of books. Is that correct?
I feel like it's
probably we're not going to name the books, obviously. But I think it's
true of both companies, and it's because a lot of times there's an effort to double ship big books. Both DC and Marvel are guilty of it. They'll have the two main X-Men titles come out two times a month. A Batman book and a Superman book are the same way, or maybe two of each. And then the Avengers title, I think, both right now and the plan going forward is to have, I think right now it's weekly, and the plan going forward is to have three issues a month or something, and just have one Avengers title, and to cut it down from like five tie-in titles every month to one team or one title, one basic title. And when they're doing that now, they're making a real effort on both sides to, I think, hire higher quality creative teams. But it is something that I think can be said. It's really weird. It goes in phases. And I've noticed this as both a fan and someone who worked in comics for a long time. But there's periods of time where fans get really upset in comics about comics being late. And they get really mad about it. And they're like, a comic book was a week late or a comic book was a month late. And there was a period of time in the early 2000s, starting maybe in the late 90s, when those big companies and the big names would be catered to by the big companies, and they would take forever. Like a really big big author would wait for an artist that took forever, and they demand that they have to have the artist they want. And so it would take
two
months.
Things though. There, real quick, I think I waited 2 years for the final issue of Camelot 3000.
Yeah.
And did Incredible Hulk versus Wolverine ever finish?
Oh, or Ultimate? Yes, it did. Yes. But it took, again, years. Another one, S.H.I.E.L.D. Jonathan Hickman and Dustin Weaver's S.H.I.E.L.D. is amazing. It is finally concluding, again, with years of hiatus.
That's the funny thing. I read that like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I saw somebody saying, oh, look, the last issue is out. I was like, wait a second. Oh, yeah, I read that before I stopped collecting comics. That was a great series. I completely forgot it hasn't finished. And it's been like 6 years, right?
I think it's been like maybe 4 or 5 years since the last part came out. And it is
it's been 6 years since issue one.
I think you're right. And they just solicited last month. They just solicited the finale.
I'll wait for it to be trade paperback. I'll read it all. It was really good.
It is. It's amazingly good. But it's like, it's just so weird. And stuff like those books, you know, like Dark Knight Returns or Watchmen, nobody remembers after they're done. Nobody cares unless they're like this book, like with years and years between. But if it's several months, nobody really cares when it's done if it's a high-quality indie book. But you can't treat a monthly book the same way when it's a shared universe. Like you couldn't let Spider-Man take extra time to come out if it was really important for it to be told before Infinity War. You know, if Infinity War spoils something that happens in Homecoming, you couldn't wait to release it afterwards. The same way with the comics, they have to depend somewhat on releasing stuff together because those are the things that fans demand. I think we want high quality stories. We want connectivity between the characters and consistency. And we want them to come out when they say they're going to come out. And okay, but all these things take front seat or back seat at different times, and there's different trends. So for a little while, everyone was mad about books coming out later, but they were coming out later with high quality creators. And now they're more concerned with books coming out on time, but that means we have like this almost whatever we can get policy on books. So like right now, Spider-Man will have an alternating team with coming out 2 or 3 times a month, and they'll have like a really high quality person like Stuart Immonen, and then someone else who's pretty good, and then someone else who can draw a little bit like Stuart Immonen is not bad, but is not at his level, you know, and there's someone to pick up that slack. And I feel like that is something that Marvel has come under fire for, is more and more hiring either people who aren't the right fit or people who are just filling in space, I think, and not maybe making sure they cast the creators with the high quality people they deserve. And that's another thing that used to be like DC's policy used to be to hire crappy people for their big books. Like I can't remember. I think Mark Waid's the one who let it slip in like negotiations when he temporarily left DC because they fired him off of Superman after promising him an arc on Superman, and it was going to be him and Grant Morrison, these big names in comics, were going to be part of the new writers for 4 different Superman comics, and they pulled the plug at the last minute. And the policy was, we put good writers on The Flash and Green Lantern because they need them, but people are going to buy Superman and Batman no matter what, so we don't put good people on them. And it's like, that is awful. That is the worst idea. And like I remember like my middle brother is not into comics as much, but was as a kid at the time, like as he's leaving his interest in comics, saying like, everyone in America would be interested in a really great Superman or Batman story because they love those characters. Like, why don't they put their best foot forward? I'm like, people are stupid. Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't make sense. But I think it's an interesting question about the sales and quality. I think some of it's quality and some of it's just generally print media is finally catching up to comics. You know, over the past decade, every single print medium in America has gone down in sales except for comic books, which has gone up after like 2004 until a year and a half ago. So we can't really complain too much as far as the comic industry goes. We've been sheltered from reality for a while.
Well, I almost think they really need to start focusing, and this is totally aside, and I apologize, Tim, but, you know, many years ago, they talked about just stop with the monthlies and turn some of it into just, you know, do graphic novels like they used to do back in the day. You know, they used to have, I remember that, I forget, there were oversized graphic novels that Marvel used to do. Sometimes they'd introduce new characters.
Yeah, the first New Mutants was, right, which we talked about last week. That was introduced in one of those. It was the size, and they were sometimes different dimensions. Usually they were just oversized, like European Digest style. But that one was almost shaped like a record, I remember. Like it was more square shaped. It was huge. I had to put it in the side of my comic book box, like where I collect all my collected issues were in, because it didn't fit in lengthwise like the other comics.
Yeah, they should go back. They need to evolve a little bit, especially with a lot of people waiting for things to be in trade paperbacks. You know, maybe just invest more in solid artists with good writers for a longer story.
Have you seen last week's and the week before, I think, DC announcements?
Well, I saw DC's announcements today, and I can tell you right now, Chung on Justice League is amazing.
Oh, yeah, they announced that. Oh, sorry,
sorry, Tim.
Last week. But
I'm sorry, Tim.
We are thoroughly off the rails. I was going to say, but it's exactly as you described with, like, one of the things. They're introduced, like, two or three different lines, one for young readers, one for young adults. One of them is specifically, I think, just for readers of comics that's called Black Label. And it's all not continuity stuff, but it's just super high-quality creative teams doing their own takes on characters. And, like, I think there's two different people – or two different sets of Wonder Woman books, one of them by Greg Rucka, who's really got a critically acclaimed – two different critically acclaimed runs with the character and has a pretty good history with Star Wars as well, and someone who I know. But his name is one that jumped out at me on this list. They're all, I think, just stories that are kind of like Elseworlds or standalones or whatever.
See, why can't – you know, the one thing – I think – I'm not sure it came from our account, from our podcast 287 account. But, man, I'd love to see some Elseworld Star Wars stuff after seeing that out front.
Yeah, I shared those after someone pointed me to the imager, that had them all.
It would be fun to get an evil Obi-Wan, or, you know, what if man, I'd love to get some what ifs in Star Wars, like what if Mace Windu survived or things like that. That would
Dark
be fun.
Dark Force did those with the Infinities or something, right?
Have it be a monthly. It'd be fun. Yeah, let somebody just go, you know what, do whatever the hell you want month.
Man.
I don't really care.
That would be great, and it could inspire so much cool stuff, and it doesn't have to be like the Infinities. I mean, it could be, or like that concept art where it's like, what if Leia was raised by Vader? You know that was a real Infinity story, I think I remember. But like, it doesn't have to be something that's so different. It could just be, like you said, just like let someone have free reign. Like, just say, like, you could tell any story you want to tell in a New Hope era, but nobody has to worry. The story group doesn't have to worry about it fitting in, you know? Or you can tell any story you want to tell in between Empire and Revenge or Return, and you could have somebody could use Dash Rendar, even if he's not canon still, you know? Because there's truth to everything, legend or whatever. You know what I mean? Like
you open the comic, it says, these are not canon.
Gosh, you do a framing device, and you have Maz telling stories in the bar, you know? Or people telling stories in Maz's bar before it explodes, before the castle explodes in The Force Awakens. There's so many different ways you could do something and make it clear, like, these are just stories. They're not anything that we're not telling anything important. We're not changing the fate of characters. Somebody just wants to tell a cool story about Wedge Antilles and Dash Rendar.
Wait, as long as it's not those type of stories.
Well, they all have their place.
That's someplace else.
Hard R.
That's hard. Something else. That's the dark webs.
Hey, dark webs. I'm just saying. Chuck Tingle's Star Wars presents. I saw something.
You can have the married life of Zeb and Alexander.
Man, Zeb and Callus is right at the end, especially with Steve Bloom's discussion of it. That was pretty much setting up the Chuck Tingle Star Wars story.
Yeah, I mean,
a man and his alien who he almost committed genocide against. Like, it really does feel like it could be a Chuck Tingle story. Throw a dinosaur in there.
Or how about it's an alien and his man?
It also works.
Yeah. So, anyways. Sorry, Tim. I'm sorry, Tim.
Well, there's obviously so much other stuff to talk about, so I'm just so sad that we didn't get to the other important pressing topics today.
Yeah, I think that's probably the title of this episode. Just sorry, Tim. Sorry.
Or
I mean, there's some decent Star Wars discussion in here. There's also
all into stuff that relates to Star Wars as we meander farther away from it.
Which I do. We need to have a comics 287 also.
We just need to have like the main feed being a podcast 2187, and then like an offshoot feed being like all the other types of 2187.
Yeah, movies 2187, comics 2187,
Vanderpump Rules 2187,
slash fic. What'd you say?
Score Vanderpump tracks. Rules 2187.
Yes. Vanderpump Rules 2187. Score Tracks 2187. We just need a 2187 franchise.
I sort of feel like in this, you know, I don't a drought, famine, whatever. In this upcoming dead period of Star Wars content, potentially, I feel like we're gonna have no problem filling up the time with Vanderpump and Score Talk and random comics and movies and monster stuff. Hey, there is a kaiju movie coming out soon. And Ron can stink it because it's got John Boyega. It looks awesome.
I'm going Sunday.
Is it this week?
Yeah, it's coming out Friday.
And the next week, the week after, is Ready Player One.
Dang.
I know. I'm gonna try to see both of those.
I'm not like down on Ready Player One, but it's not really sold me.
Go away. You and the internet's annoying me today.
Hey, I'm not one of those people that's like is down on it without seeing it.
Oh, nostalgia. I can't have nostalgia in my film.
Whoa. I'm not against nostalgia.
Here's the other thing I'm seeing on the internet. Why did they have to make this film? I don't know. Go the fuck away. Sorry, Tim. Didn't mean to.
Whoa. Hey.
You don't have to see it. You don't like it.
You're absolutely right. I'm not super interested in it because the stuff that I feel like I've been less satisfied with from Spielberg in his career overall, and especially in the last, I think, 20 years, I've been pretty disappointed with his science fiction fantasy stuff compared to his reality based or flat out based on a true story stuff. Those movies,
last,
I feel like,
you said are in the last 20 years. Did you say in the last 20 years?
I think so.
Wow, AI, what do you got to say about that?
I hate the last act. I feel like AI...
Oh, my God, the last act is effing brilliant. Brilliant.
For me, I think that was an impossible task, and it was hard because Kubrick's widow asked him to do it, but he literally, in like all the stuff about it, you know, leading up to it and afterward, all these interviews and stuff, it makes sense to me why I didn't... I didn't feel like it made a whole lot of sense cohesively. I felt like it felt like three different films almost to me watching it. And then reading about it, that's literally what it is. There were three unfinished drafts by Kubrick, and Spielberg said he didn't know which one to use and didn't feel right about cutting any of them, so he found some way to blend them into one story. And he did an amazing job with that, but I felt like it felt like when he leaves – and runs away at the end of the first act, and then when he, you know, ends up by himself in the desolate, you know, wasteland at the end of the second act, and then the very end epilogue. I feel like all these things feel like separate mini stories that are connected to me. And I don't know,
Before we go, when's the last time you saw it?
It's been a while. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Maybe it's less than 10 years, but it could be close to 10 years.
If you have time, watch it again. Don't mute me like the guy who muted me because I like Battleship. Watch AI.
I like some awful stuff, so I'm not going to hate on anybody for anything.
Here's the thing. I like what you like. Enjoy it or don't enjoy it.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and I can say some stuff is bad that I like. Like I love the Andy Samberg movie Hot Rod by him and the other Lonely Island guys, but it is stupid. It's bad. But like I'll watch it probably another like two times this calendar year. And I've watched it once, I think. I love it. But so there's no shame in liking what you like, but I don't know, dude. For me, I think it's just not having a super interest in it. I'm not going to be all down on something I haven't seen yet. So, but I also feel
like, listen, Silvestri, Spielberg, King Kong, DeLorean, Chucky, Iron Giant, virtual reality,
Jurassic Park, and Star Wars.
Thank you. Jurassic Park, Star Wars, Freddy Krueger. Let's see what else.
If you want to get into it, Halo and Overwatch too.
Did I say Spielberg?
You did, yeah. But you can say it again.
The actual trailer itself doesn't draw me in. And like I said,
I don't know. Some people don't even watch trailers because they don't want to be spoiled. These are all the things that are in this movie. And you're not into it? The DeLorean alone should make you just go, oh, I'm going.
And Silvestri's doing the music. I really hope there's a Silvestri DeLorean moment.
It's in the trailer. They do the little chimes from Back to the Future.
Oh, is it? I've only seen it like once.
Jared.
Nice.
I understand, dude. I definitely understand. But I don't know,
I don't like nostalgia.
I'm not saying I don't like nostalgia, but I do understand like the idea that that isn't all it takes for me to be interested in something. And like, I don't know, man.
I don't think nostalgia is ruining movies. I'll tell you that.
I don't think nostalgia is ruining movies. And I'm with you on the annoyance at that criticism and that complaint. Cause while for me, I'm not super interested in it. I think the only selling point I've seen in the trailers that I've seen, not having read the book and having heard very mixed things from people who I respect, like I've heard some people who really, really liked the book and a lot of people who hated it. So I have no preconceived notions about the source material because I'm getting conflicting information from people I trust.
There's a smear campaign against both right now. Seriously.
All I know is I roll my eyes every time I see half or more of the people who I know who bitch about the nostalgia factor, because what is mashup shirt culture if not pointless nostalgia? Like, hey, here's two things that kind of have a pun shoved together or completely unrelated things. Like, I saw so many people sharing this fan art thing that was made into shirts and everything you can make on TeePublic and Teespring and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the cast of Bob's Burgers after the first Guardians of the Galaxy with them dressed as the characters from Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm like, maybe one of the characters, like Louise as Drax, has some character overlap. Maybe. But none of the others make any sense at all. There's no pun. There's no reason. And all these people are sharing it. It's like, it's not even nostalgia as much as it's reference culture. And we can't be a culture that's all about reference culture and until it's not. Until I want to say that's bad when that's everything we like. Like everything we like is, that's a reference to The Simpsons. That's a reference to this. That's the. And then a movie is about that and then now you're mad about it. So maybe even that's it. Maybe I'm not interested in it just because of the heat around it, because I'm so irritated with people complaining about it. But I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to wait for HBO. You know? And to be fair,
Tim, next week.
Those are usually all movies about nostalgia. I'm not interested in.
Next week's theme is nostalgia, you're saying?
Yes. Because some people think that nostalgia is what ruined people's enjoyment of The Last Jedi. And I disagree. We'll get into
some people, but I also feel like I don't want to police people's opinions anymore, man.
Like, well, I'm not hating. Look, if you don't like it, you don't like it.
Yeah, and there are people who have like I know a lot of people who have really good reasons why they don't like it. You've explained them to me. It's like
No. But listen, my friend, if he's listening, there's no reason to give Last Jedi a half star.
Sorry. I'm not so sure, but that's the same thing. You know, as saying, you know, is what I'm trying to say. Like, I feel like a half star is pretty extreme. I just feel like you don't have to justify your feelings for disliking something. Just don't expect everyone else to disagree with you, and don't get mad that people do disagree with you.
Yes, I agree.
If they do, like, if you know. I remember people who felt alienated after The Force Awakens because anyone who didn't like it was labeled a fake fan or whatever by a lot of people. And I'm like, that's just nonsense, dude. Like, we don't all have to like anything. Like, it'd be like being a kid when the Ewok movies came out. Like, I can't imagine getting into an argument about it now as an adult. But with my personality and my OCD and everything, I could see myself at like 7. Getting into it with some kid over the cartoon, just being like,
"That's true.
It says Star Wars, it's real. Shut up. Like, you don't know anything." Like, I'll admit, it makes no sense that before the Rebels got there, that Wicket could totally talk, but I'm going to shrug my shoulders and be like, apparently he got hit in the head and forgot how to talk, because those movies count, and they have Wilford Brimley playing a wizard, so...
How the hell do we have a long episode when we have nothing to talk about? All right, Tim, play us out. Cause we can go all night, and I gotta go.
No worries. And we ended on Ewoks, and
and Blake's enjoying the conversation. What does that mean? Star Wars. Oh, that's right, Star Wars.
Okay.
Amen.
All right. You know what? Okay. So yeah, no, I'm gonna put it in now. But anyway, I guess I'm happy we're able. I promised people at the beginning of the show, I'm like, we're gonna have a great episode, and it was great. Just in its, like Mark said, in its own way, it was not a very Star Wars podcast.
Actually, there was a decent amount.
It was mixed in. I'm using air quotes, mixed in here and there, but yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, if we were on the Titanic, we could chalk this one up to the captain just being like, I'm just going to see what happens.
What happens if I steer into an iceberg? That's
no hands. No hands, guys. Somebody tape this. I just want to see what happens. Yeah, yep. I've had a few, but I'm feeling adventurous.
I blame Tim.
I'm not saying I blame Tim. I'm just saying if
Tim
is...
No, you're
Tim
saying
is,
you blame Tim. I blame Tim.
If he's the captain of the ship, yeah. Then he's the one who's culpable.
I think all three of us should blame Tim. It makes sense.
I blame Tim.
So
whoever that guy is.
Anyway.
That's a good alternate title for this episode. I blame Tim.
No, it should be both like, I'm sorry, Tim, / I blame Tim.
I like that.
There you go.
Anyway, okay. I'm leaving, and you're all leaving. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.